And how are you
Well,
this morning?
hello.
Hello. We haven't met, but I've spent some pleasant time with your brother, Gil.
Nice.
He was in Madison 4 years ago to play the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. It was the most relaxed performance I'd ever seen. He was almost like a wandering musician as he kind of strolled around the stage smiling. I thought, boy, he's got that one down. It was.
I actually, by total coincidence, I just saw him play that last night at Carnegie Hall.
Oh, really?
And I hadn't heard him do the Tchaikovsky in a long time. Yeah, he does. It's very natural in his fingers, isn't
It is, yeah. And he was fun to talk to, also. Well, you sort of keep it all in the family to a great extent, don't you? Of course, you've recorded with Gil, and I think what, another family member too? Am I remembering that right?
it? Well, I
Not
definitely
counting your
record.
other half, of course.
Well, I was going to say, I definitely have recorded with my other half. I haven't recorded with Adele, my sister-in-law, who's Gil's wife, who's a fabulous violinist, but we play together quite a bit, so.
Well, should I ask what's it like performing with a conductor that you're married to, David Robertson?
Well, we met playing together, so our relationship was founded on musical collaboration before anything else. And in fact, it was also a Chopin concerto, so it was the other Chopin concerto, but 23 years later, almost 24, here we are playing the other one for the first time together.
You know, this second piano concerto of Chopin, he wrote it when he was all of like 19 or 20. And it is sometimes said, well, it is said that he may well have gotten some assistance with the orchestration, and that gives some performers over the course of the years, they think, the license to kind of tinker with the orchestration. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think his orchestration's glorious. I think it's so beautiful, especially in this F minor concerto. I feel like the use of the woodwinds, the individual instruments, and how they layer one on top of each other, and the way that he uses the strings to kind of, it's essentially create a halo around the piano part, right? It's just to add this incredible color and warmth. I think he may have had assistance in the sense that somebody said, "Think about this," but the results are absolutely Chopin's imagination.
Very much a lyrical piece, would you say, as so much of Chopin is, the short pieces?
Incredibly lyrical, especially that middle movement is, it's like an extended nocturne. But at the same time, because it is a concerto and bigger in form, he does a lot of other things too. So, for example, in the middle of the second movement, there's this enormous recitative, very emotional recitative, in which the piano is really just speaking and emoting in just incredibly powerfully, with the orchestra supporting the way you would in an opera. And in fact, Chopin's own favorite genre to attend when he was going to concerts himself was bel canto opera. That was what he loved more than anything else, and you can hear that for sure in that second movement.
There is a lot of operatic influence, isn't there, in instrumental works of especially that first quarter or so of the 19th century. It sounds a lot of instrumental works, concertos in particular, well, and Mozart too, for that matter, which of course you're very
Absolutely.
familiar with. At times it sounds like, oh, the piano is a soprano here, really, you know.
You know, that desire to imitate the human voice with our instruments runs deep, and it runs in all instruments. And what's interesting is, in certain ways, the piano is one of the furthest away from that possibility, right? A wind instrument uses breath the same way a singer does. A string instrument can use their bow in a way that is quite similar to the way a singer uses their breath. The piano doesn't have much of any of those things. And one of the things I always tell my students is that, you know, legato, for example, on the piano, it's a magic trick. It's an illusion. These other instruments can actually do it, but we have to recreate the aspect of it. That's where I think, for example, the genius of using the strings to create that aura around the piano sound, that Chopin chose, really helps that feeling, it really helps us imagine as if the piano is actually playing in this wonderful, breathy way.
So when you come to a place like Milwaukee to perform this concerto for the X number of time, Do you have a sense of, well, I think this time when I'm going to play it, I'm going to bring this to it. I'm going to emphasize this. I'm going to do it in some way that I haven't done quite before.
Absolutely. Every time I come to a piece, particularly one like this that I've known, I learned this as a teenager. So I've been playing it for over 30 years. And every time I come to it, I still discover new things. I am looking for different things out of it. You know, I understand more. I spent a great deal of COVID time, the initial sort of lockdown time, obsessing over Chopin and li living with his etudes very deeply. I taught a bunch of classes on them, and I also just, you know, I kept gravitating towards them for myself in my own practice when there weren't concerts. And so I think I come to Chopin completely differently now than I would have even just 4 years ago.
More lyrically, more vocally, you might say.
On the one hand, and on the other hand, I have a completely different appreciation now for the incredible brilliance of his pianistic technique. I think I took it for granted because, you know, I learned a concerto like this as a teenager and the other one as well. So I took for granted what it was he was asking the hand to do. But really, he was revolutionary in what he was asking the hand to do and how he expected the hand to be able to do it. And in the etudes, he lays this out so clearly, you know, long before the kind of neural imaging that we have now, where people are so attuned to which part of the hand ought to do what and what's healthy and what's not. He knew instinctively exactly what's right and how to maximize, for example, the hand's reach across the keyboard. So to give a sense of holding on to more notes than you physically can actually hold on to. And
Wow,
I'm using a lot of that in the way that I approach the concerto now.
that sounds almost mystical.
I think for him, on some level, it was mystical because it wasn't connected. Right now we have hand specialists who could tell you, well, of course, this one will go that way and this one will go that way. But for him, it was absolutely a matter of feeling. But he was so attuned to that feeling. You know, one of the things Chopin talked about with his students, he would like to practice in the dark. He enjoyed that because he felt it enhanced his sensation, not only for listening, but I think for feeling the hands at the keyboard. So I think part of that connection, I like the word mystical because I think there was something to that, right? He was it subconscious, but so total, this connection that he had to how his body moved.
Well, of course, we know there were some, have been some fabulous blind pianists too over the course of time.
Absolutely.
And I suspect that, well, if we watched a lot of musicians, we would see that they're performing with their eyes closed.
Yeah, I certainly I do that more in Chopin, interestingly, than I do in some other composers, right? I think he does write with that sensation in mind in certain ways.
Maybe kind of a paradox or just shows my limitations, but when I listen to Chopin's songs, I find them not as really song-like or lyrical as I do the piano pieces.
Interesting. You know, one of the other quotes of his, so he loved the thing about practicing with the lights off. The other thing that he used to say to his students all the time, that I share with my students all the time, is he referred to the arm as the lung of the pianist.
The lung of the
And
pianist. Oh,
you
because of
know
what the power that it puts into the voice.
and the yeah and the ability or the necessity for it to be flexible and to be able to sort of, you know, I'm giving you a visual, which doesn't work great on radio, but sort of waving the arm in a natural, breathy way that it flows up and down with this constant give and take, which is very much the way you need to play the lyrical parts of Chopin for sure, and frankly, all the parts of Chopin. So that question, it's interesting that you say that about the voice. Well, he really understood how to put that aspect of vocal technique right into the piano. So maybe that's where it's most effective.
Well, yeah, in a sense, songs without words. I mean, if you listen to that Opus 10, number 3 etude, for example, if
Yeah.
and well, actually, it was used in a pop song or two, but that's sort of a different thing. But if even in a Chopin-esque style, you were to put a voice to it, in my way of thinking, it would be too much because the piano says it all.
The piano's already doing it. And I think he was really, it's not that other keyboardists before him didn't try to be lyrical. Of course they did. And even, as you said, specifically, Mozart, for example, really was looking for a vocal line in the piano. Beethoven, too, in certain places. But I think Chopin was the first one to just get it, to figure out how to really relate that in a way that, you know, the keyboard instruments had not been all that musical beforehand.
Well, that's, yeah, certainly true. I'm intrigued back in the sense of, you know, working with the hand, the relationship between Chopin and Robert Schumann. Schumann, of course, famously said, "Hats off, gentlemen, a genius," about the 20-year-old Chopin.
Yes.
Chopin apparently did not care for Schumann's music and never responded to any of the five glowing letters that Schumann wrote to Chopin. Do you have any sense of why that would be in terms of their two different styles?
Well, I question a little bit whether he didn't care for it or if he was just so socially awkward and, you know, nonplussed by it that he didn't really respond to it. But I think, interestingly, Chopin was quite positive about Clara Schumann's music, which in certain ways breathes in a similar way to Chopin's. So I think, you know, they were part of this circle. They certainly interacted in many different ways. I think there was great respect on Chopin's part to Schumann, but Chopin was so immersed in his own way of looking at music that I think it was quite difficult for him to extract from that in any way, really, whether it be for Schumann or for anything else. So you hear traces of older composers in his music, but he was very much in his own sonic world.
Yeah, that's true. If you read some of the letters that he wrote right after he got to Vienna or Paris, he's really kind of dissing a lot of pianists collectively, saying, yeah, there are a lot of just humbugs here, aren't there?
Yes.
And in terms of Chopin and the development of the piano, he really could not have written a lot of these things, could he, with a piano that even was available to Mozart?
Well, this is, you know, one of the things that's so extraordinary. You know, one of my those sort of historical moments I would have loved to have been part of is you had Chopin, who loved these Pleyel pianos, you know, and Liszt, who was going around at the same time and who really loved these other pianos, these Erhard pianos. And the way of playing on each of them was different enough. The quality of tone was different enough. And each composer, in a sense, developed his personal sense of sound through thinking about what the instrument was capable of doing. So it was this symbiotic relationship for each of them. Which I think is fascinating. And of course, our modern piano is nothing like Chopin's piano. So the very first thing that I tell my students about Chopin's piano is that it was very quiet. And Chopin himself was known, even within the quieter levels that the Pleyel had anyway, he was particularly known for wanting to play quietly. People would write about it and comment on it after every performance, which there were not many. He didn't enjoy performing in public and did very few performances in public. But they would write about just how quietly he played. They would always have to lean in to really hear the sound. And he was not going for bravura. You know, he writes in the scores, he will occasionally write fortissimo. But that does not mean even remotely the same thing that it does when Rachmaninoff writes fortissimo.
Interesting. That may be what prompted John Field, you know, the great Irish pianist and the inventor of the piano nocturne, to dub Chopin a sick room talent. But if you hear some of those pieces, you know, the Revolutionary Polonaise and that kind of thing, or Etude, it's hard to imagine him playing those gently.
He clearly had an inner intensity that would come out, and I think sometimes it would come out in volume as well. But I think that for me, the way I interpret it is that that intensity was mostly just under the surface rather than being extrovertedly outside. And maybe that in some ways was specifically in his mind to differentiate from Liszt, who is exactly the opposite, right? Liszt couldn't possibly be more extroverted in his showmanship and in his playing. And I think Chopin very specifically, and he there's some wonderful books commentary from Chopin's students about what he was like as a teacher. I think he very specifically dissuaded them from that style of playing.
Do you read up on a composer's biography before even something that you've performed so many times? I mean, the Chopin biography is so full of, let's say, color, for lack of a better word, tragedy, if you want to put it that way. Do you read that into some of these pieces when you play them?
I do in many ways, you know, and that's part of you were asking at the beginning about whether I play it differently. I think each time that I come back to a piece like this, I may be more influenced by some other aspect of a biography that I've been thinking about, that I've been mulling over. And one of the things about biographies is that they give you a sense into how the composer was actually a human being, right? And that's it's a very interesting direct connection. Just a slight sidebar, but a very interesting story. Last week, I performed a program on my chamber series in Southern California with the Pacific Symphony that included the music of both Clara and Robert Schumann and other musicians who were influenced by, specifically by Clara. She's really the one I'm after, trying to kind of figure her out at the moment. And I got a note from their great-great-granddaughter who came to the concert. And we had a wonderful post-concert conversation with her. And my takeaways from that conversation is just the fact that this great-great-granddaughter exists and is there speaking about them gives them such a three-dimensionality, right? I mean, the Schumann story is all about love, and here's the product of that love, right? Here's a descendant.
They had several children, and the children
So,
had
but
children.
you know that for me, the biographies is a similar kind of thing. It's this, it allows you to see, you know, a person, because of course the music we think of as untouchable, and we look at it with a sort
Abstract,
of biblical reverence. You know, we don't want to touch anything. But these were people with feelings and lives and emotions and, you know, experiences that in certain ways are not that different from ours.
One more before you go. You're working on a Mozart project,
Yes.
a large one, a large project, I think.
If by large you mean enormous, yeah. So I've been I have recorded already actually the complete Mozart piano sonatas, and so far we have released about half of them on CD, on three CDs, and there are three more discs coming within the next year or so as we edit them. Yeah, it was an incredible project. Also, it started pre-pandemic, but we managed to finish it sort of in the early lockdown days. 18 sonatas, which in many ways run, I mean, he lived a short life, but in many ways they run from the very beginning of his compositional career to almost the very end. And so that span, you know, I've been playing these sonatas my whole life. Literally, I mean, I think I played the first one when I was five. And I think it was my audition piece. But you know, but to look at them as, again, to see a person's a human being's development, to look at them as a single unit, a single entity, what happens to his thinking over the course of these 18 sonatas, which were hardly the only 18 he wrote, they're just the only 18 that he published. But how he views the piano, how he's thinking about the instrument, he's exposed to more and more instruments during that time that have more and more capabilities. He begins to even influence how people build instruments by the end of that time. Not to mention that at the beginning of it, he has, you know, almost no operatic, symphonic experience. By the end, he's, you know, Mozart, who we know as Mozart. So it's fascinating to see that journey and his sort of his own compositional experimentation in that time.
Kind of maybe from drawing room to theater or opera house in terms of the effect on these sonatas.
Well, what's really interesting, it's interesting you bring up theater. What's interesting is that from the very beginning he thinks of it as theater. He was that's where his bread and butter was as a child. You know, they went to the Mozarts went to the theater every night. That's what they did. So, yeah, he puts that right into the sonatas.
Well, it's been a pleasure. It sounds like something's going on there, so I
Yeah,
won't.
I hope if you need me to say anything again or to repeat, but I think that ambulance is done.
No, it's been a great pleasure, and I'm sure that they will enjoy you greatly again in Milwaukee to play the Chopin Second Piano Concerto with kind
Thank
of
you.
the latest sensitivity that you had with that piece.
Well, thank you so much. I look very much forward to being back there. I love that orchestra so much, and I can't wait to try the new hall.
I hear good things about it, and I'm certainly looking forward to hearing about your performance. Orly
Thank you
Schaffen, it's
so much.
been a great pleasure. Thank you much. Bye now.